Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to a very special edition of the Peristyle Podcast. We're going to do a Stanford game review with a couple of insiders on both sides of the ball. We're going to talk to former USC quarterback Shane Foley, talk about the USC side. And we're going to talk to David Lombardi, who works for thebootleg.com, part of the scout.com network. He's a Stanford insider. We want to get his thoughts from what went on up there on the farm. So great show for you coming up. We'll talk to those guys in a second. Just want to let people know, I know there's been a lot of confusion over the last several weeks. USCfootball.com moving over to scout.com. So if you have any issues, you can always email me, ryan@uscfootball.com. Give you all the latest stuff, what's going on there. But you definitely want to go over there, check it out. That's where the Peristyle is. That's where the war rooms are. Everything on uscfootball.com that you knew before is over there on scout.com now. So I know there's some confusion. So if you have any problems with that, logging in or anything, just drop me an email, ryan@uscfootball.com, and I will take care of it. All right, we are joined on this very special edition of the Peristyle Podcast by David Lombardi. He's a contributor for thebootleg.com, which is the Stanford site for the scout.com network. He's a five-tool reporter up in the Bay Area and a very, very inside the Stanford program, a Stanford insider. David Lombardi joining us. You can follow him at davidlombardisports.com or at David M. Lombardi on Twitter. David, how's it going, man? How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing, Ryan?
Pretty good. Just kind of crazy day yesterday, crazy game. I know you were up there covering the team, and you do a great job on Twitter and on the bootleg covering Stanford, and just seem to really know your stuff when it comes to the Cardinal. And another game that, you know, we were talking off air a little bit, seemed like almost a mirror image of the game from last year between USC and Stanford.
Yeah, you could take the 2013 game and then put it on steroids, I feel. And that's what you'd get yesterday, at least based on the missed opportunities for Stanford. Because, I mean, in all my keys to the game, I was rambling on and on about how Stanford only scored 10 points in four trips to the red zone last year at the Coliseum. And, you know, I thought that was terrible. In comparison to what Stanford did yesterday, that was actually great efficiency back in 2013, because they took the ball inside the USC 30 on every single one of their drives. So nine times Stanford took the ball inside the 30-yard line, and they came up with 10 total points, which I still, you know, just can't understand right now. And I know USC had the number one red zone defense in the nation last year. It looks like they obviously have a good red zone defense again, but it's probably going to be hard for anybody to catch USC statistically in that category after they got to face Stanford yesterday, and they got nine trips basically if they shut them out.
That's absolutely insane. When you think about it, you're watching the game, you don't realize that, well, Stanford's never been stopped in their own territory. Like, they've every single drive somehow found your way inside the 30 and really to only put up 10 points. It's crazy. And you tweeted out a statistic. I think it was, maybe you can share kind of what is the average yards per play between the 20s and then inside the 20.
Yeah, actually between the 30s.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And 30. Yeah. But still, I think very similar kind of thing, I guess, not between the 30s, between the 30 and the other goal line and the 30 and the USC end zone. So when Stanford was in the middle of the field before they crossed the 30, they were averaging 8.9 yards per play. And then after they crossed that 30, as they neared the red zone, it was 2.1 yards per play. So, I mean, just a complete tumble off a cliff for Stanford when they got closer to the red zone.
Wow. Yeah, I really didn't expect that. I thought there would be a little bit more scoring in the game than there was. If you look on the Stanford side, that touchdown drive was very Stanford, where there was a big play to the running back out of the backfield, nice play to the tight end. It wasn't really working the outside receivers as much. It was kind of working the middle of the field, running the football. and tough gutty play with a ogre package or whatever it is to get to punch it into the end zone. That looked like Stanford. On USC's scoring drive, same thing. That kind of looked like USC. They went, they completed three passes on third down, all converted. They drove all the way down the field, threw a ball out of the backfield. They kind of mixed it up. After that USC drive, it didn't look like USC's offense was really doing anything. Stanford's defense just kind of took over. But same kind of thing with Stanford. I guess it was more when they got into the red zone, they kind of got away from what makes Stanford Stanford, it seems.
Yeah, they were more aggressive in the middle of the field. And then David Shaw, obviously, I think he's developed a little bit of a reputation for getting conservative, for playing, the NFL-style ball control and trusting his high-powered defense. And I think that you kind of see why he thinks like that. The Stanford defense has been so good over the past 3 years, and obviously yesterday I thought they were very good, considering the fact they didn't get any help from the offense. Sometimes a defense that loves to rush the passer like Stanford's, I think, really fuels itself with a lead when they have the crowd and a lead, and Stanford never really had that. They're only up by 3 points yesterday. So considering the fact they didn't get much help from the offense, I thought that holding USC to 291 total yards, 4.9 yards per play, I thought that was really impressive. So you could see why David Shaw has such faith in his unit, but I think he took it to an extreme in that he was starting to punt from the USC 29-yard line. That he was starting to, I think twice he punted from inside the 35, and he started really taking his foot off the gas play calling-wise as Stanford got close to the end zone, because he was just thinking, oh, let me set my defense up with good field position, and he almost lost sight of the fact that he needed to score points, to win the game. So it was really weird. I think, and after the game, Coach Shaw, in the press conference, in an unusual move, he did take responsibility. He said that the red zone issues are on me, and he said that that play calling was one of the problems in the red zone. Obviously, there are other ones like the penalties and all that, but I do think that that stuff got out of hand decision-making-wise for Stanford as they neared the red zone. But let's not take anything away from USC. They made some plays when they had to. They did stuff Stanford on that fourth down. So you have to tip your cap. But I think it's a combination of both. I definitely think it was good defense from USC and just really, really head-scratching decision-making from Shaw and company for Stanford.
Now, one of the things you told me before we started recording and got on the air here is that David Shaw does take over the play calling duties, and you'd mentioned it in the red zone. And is that something that, when you're looking at the pregame show and they're talking about the red zone problems that Stanford has, they had problems against USC last year. Obviously, it took it to another level, like you said, in this game. Is that something that's kind of an easy fix? Do you think David Shaw would be the kind of coach that would say, you know what, I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm going to drop calling the plays in the red zone. Just let the offensive coordinator handle it.
Well, I mean, it's been an issue before, and that's the thing. David Shaw is doing a fantastic job as Stanford's head coach. Say that you have 10 major responsibilities to tackle as a college football head coach. I'm just throwing that number out there. I'm sure it's even more, but say that you have 10 to tackle. David Shaw does 9 of those 10, I think, very well. When you look at recruiting, running practice, making sure his players are fired up to play, just managing the whole huge operation that's a college football program. But the 10th thing, which is that play calling, I think that we've seen that he's a little in over his head over the course of Stanford's losses the past couple of years. All of the losses for Stanford, and you look at Utah last year, USC last year, and now USC this season, and then and even Michigan State in the Rose Bowl, all of those losses have come down to, some non-rational or irrational decisions, play calling-wise, in the red zone. Running when Stanford should be passing and passing when they should be running. Just situations that really make you wonder, why Stanford is playing right into the hands of the opposing defense. And I don't think it's because David Shaw is a bad play caller. I think it's, just natural. If you've ever been on a sideline of a football game, especially with, packed house, big crowd, tense moment, you can't really see anything from the sideline. You know, there's a reason why offensive coordinators and a lot of the coaches are up in the booth upstairs, because they're separated from the emotional, you know, downpour of everything going on. There's a big whirlwind down on the field. They actually can see plays develop at an angle. So I really think that the problem is that David Shaw just has too much on his plate. And obviously so far he's been pretty stubborn about the whole play calling thing. And in the past he insisted that it wasn't a play calling issue. Yesterday was actually the first time that we heard him acknowledge, albeit very shortly, that play calling might have been lacking in the red zone. So we'll see if that develops into anything.
Yeah, we'll pay attention to that going out for the rest of the season. Still think this is a great team and obviously can make a run and represent the Pac-12 North. They've been able to beat Oregon the last couple of years. That'll be key again, of course, for Stanford this year. Another big game up there in the Pac-12 North. But I want to talk about the Stanford defense a little bit, because I had mentioned, you know, about the USC drive. It looked a lot like the drives USC had against Fresno State. And then pretty much every other drive the rest of the game for USC didn't look like that. So Stanford, do you feel there were some adjustments made? Because they really kept, you know, a team that ran 105 plays last week was back to looking more like a Lane Kiffin kind of team, where they were going to try to run as few plays as possible, it seemed like.
Yeah, so, and that's very common with Stanford's defense. I think we saw it all of last season, actually. Even in the game against USC, the Trojans came out, you know, and moved the ball right down the field. And it happened against Stanford's defense for multiple teams on their schedule. They gave up an early touchdown. That's simply because Stanford actually uses the opening possession as a gauge of what the opponent is going to run, especially early in the season. You don't know really, you know, what USC has been working on. So Stanford, their base defense on the first series, and to USC's credit, they converted three third downs. They moved down the field and they scored. But the new defensive coordinator, Lance Anderson, who's a disciple of Derek Mason, obviously another coach at Vanderbilt, used that first possession for USC, a scoring drive, to chart out his plan. And Stanford's plan, interestingly enough, after they made adjustments, was to move to the nickel package for essentially the whole game, which is why I think Buck Allen had so much more success rushing the ball this year than he did last year. Stanford got a little bit smaller up front, and their course of action was to, you know, they really picked their poison, and they picked their poison being the USC running game, because they really wanted to shut down all those weapons in the passing game. And I think in the first half, Cody Kessler was averaging 3.5 yards per attempt, which obviously was excellent for this defense, even though they were able to get a little bit of a running game going. So it was interesting to see how Stanford adjusted after that first possession, but I think that they adjusted admirably, and I don't think anybody today is saying that the defense is the reason that Stanford lost that game.
Certainly not. And Buck Allen, if you looked at him making a run last year when he won the MVP honors for the team, I think it was the last five or six games where he was just on fire, except for one game, and that was the Stanford game. So it's kind of funny that he's the one that ends up being the big offensive producer when last year they really shut him down.
Yeah, exactly. And a lot of people, you know, probably thinking, oh, maybe the shift to the Steve Sarkisian offense gave him some more running room. And I think there's some truth to that. They did spread things out a little bit more, and I think that opened up some holes on the interior, because Stanford was so worried about setting hard edges against the receivers for USC. But I think a huge factor was the fact that Stanford was playing more in the nickel yesterday. They were a little bit smaller because they were trying their best to match up with USC's passing game rather than the running game. It was still extremely impressive performance. Buck Allen was shedding some tackles, and I didn't see anything from him last year. I think it was like 16 carries, 26 yards. So I was wondering, you know, where the running back that I'd seen on film was when I was at the Coliseum. Yesterday I saw a very talented guy, breaking tackles, good speed, good vision. But I think it was obviously aided as well by the fact that Stanford was in a nickel for much of the game.
Wanted to have a couple questions for you about special teams as well. There's some interesting plays that happened on, and we're going to talk about the penalties too, but you mentioned the two punts when they got down, you know, Stanford got into USC territory, field goal range, ended up punting a couple times, was very curious. And that was curious on USC's side too, where it was a fourth and five, And they could have, you know, attempted a 53-yard field goal or try to go for the first down and run some more clock. And they, you know, call a couple timeouts. It was kind of, you know, long and drawn out. And Andre Hidari ends up nailing another long field goal where he's almost lost his job at times for USC. But against Stanford, he seems to play really well. But it was interesting, the decisions. I think you could argue both times Stanford got down there, you should have probably tried to kick the field goal. And there's some probably good arguments that you shouldn't have even attempted that field goal that ended up winning the game for USC. So I thought that was interesting how that all played out.
Yeah, I mean, USC was thinking about scoring, and Stanford was thinking so much about field position that they forgot about scoring. I almost think that Steve Sarkisian was rewarded for being bold there with that field goal while Stanford, it is an old cliche, but I think it applied very well yesterday. They were playing not to lose. You know, they were never thinking about the points they would actually need to win. They were only thinking about the field position they would not need to give up to avoid a loss. So it was this really perverse kind of way of thinking, I think. And, you know, it was probably a downward kind of spiral. Once David Shaw got so committed to the field position game, he didn't want to let it go. And then Sarkisian finally broke the deadlock there by sending his kicker out for the 53-yarder. And I think eerily similar to what happened last year. And, you know, last year Stanford didn't have Jordan Williamson. He was hurt for the game against USC. So they had their backup kicker, Conrad Yucaprina. And I remember a 30-yarder, I think it was blocked by USC. And they blocked like six kicks last year.
Yeah.
They might have deflected Jordan Williamson's first field goal today. But regardless of that, he missed that one. He also missed a much shorter one. And then Stanford decided not to use him for kicks that last year were well within his range. He was 18 of 20 last year from under 50 yards, yet Stanford twice decided to forego the field goal and punt in those situations. So it also makes you wonder if there's something wrong with Jordan Williamson physically, if he's hurt again, or if the staff just thinks that he's not in a mental position to be attempting those kicks right now. But it was definitely a weird game in that regard.
Yeah, I mean, and if you look at, you're talking about field position, 2.5 minutes left in the game, you're attempting a 53-yard field goal on the USC side. If you miss that, I mean, yeah, you're giving an excellent field goal position to Stanford.
Exactly, yeah. So, I mean, it was a bold move. Sarkisian was thinking about points ahead of field position, and that ended up winning him the game because Shaw was thinking about field position ahead of points. I think that was the fundamental difference in philosophy yesterday.
Last thing I wanted to talk to you about was the officiating. The, you know, Lance Clark is, you know, he's pretty well known as one of the better Pac-12 officials. But I don't know how obviously the Pac-12 officials are not known for their, I don't know, I don't want to be too mean, but they're not really known as the best group in college football. You can see Glasses Ref at Glasses Ref on Twitter tweeting out all kinds of fun stuff about Pac-12 officiating. It's kind of a joke, it seems, most part. But I thought Lance Clark usually does a pretty good job. But, man, it just seemed like this one got out of hand. There was penalties. I think there was four penalties on the first drive alone, and that just kind of set the tone for the rest of the game.
Yeah, it was a very heavily penalized game, especially for Stanford standards. And it was ironic because last year in the whole Sarkisian Shaw brouhaha, Shaw, when he gave him that, you know, really strict rebuke to the injury-faking accusations. And the one thing that Shaw very sharply said in that prepared statement, he noted that Stanford was one of the least penalized teams in the nation. And that ended up being very ironic because immediately there were flags all over the field against Stanford. And then, of course, it turned into a really weird mess later on when USC had the player ejected and Pat Hayden came down onto the field. I still didn't know what was going on there, but it definitely was one of those games. It was a weird game, you know. Let's just put it that way. I actually, you know, I think it's a fascinating matchup whenever Stanford plays USC because of the rivalry. I mean, every single year that it's just a new crazy twist. And And ever since 2007, you really look forward to when these two teams play because of, you know, not necessarily even the pure football aspect, but the coaching rivalries and the background there. So So when you have all that, you really, I think, want them, both of these teams, to play again at Levi Stadium in this Pac-12 championship game, because I feel that yesterday has had a weirdness level to it between the red zone and the officiating and the athletic director on the field yelling at the refs, and one of Sarkisian's assistants texting up to the athletic director's booth for him to come down. I think that you had so many weird things that I think that you want to see this game again at the end of the season. I think that'd be cool. I don't know what the chances of that happening are, because obviously Stanford's a little damaged right now after that loss. They're going to have to go through the North and Oregon, but who knows, you know. It's going to be fun moving forward. But thankfully, I think for both teams, this game was only in week two, you know.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of the reason why it was so sloppy, was because it was in week two. But I think Stanford would have a really sour taste in their mouth had this been, you know, in November right now, because you don't have a chance to recover from a game like this in November. But I guess more thankfully for Stanford, this was in week two.
Yeah, and I don't think you're going to see Stanford lose to a Utah this year. And still, I think I have a great shot at beating Oregon. They have the formula. They know what to do there. So I think there's...
They're going to have to beat Oregon anyway, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, unless Oregon loses to a Utah or whoever they play, then Stanford is going to have to go up to Austin and win. And Oregon will have to actually lose twice, because if they beat Stanford... it's just a situation where unless Oregon loses twice, Stanford has to go up there and win. And I guess now they have to win anyway, because they've already had that one Pac-12 loss.
All right. Well, he's David Lombardi. You can follow him, DavidLombardiSports.com, or on Twitter, David M. Lombardi. He's a great follow. And anything up in the Bay Area, he's all over it. And thanks very much, David, for coming on and sharing your thoughts.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, thanks, Ryan.
All right. Thanks very much. And everyone else, hey, back in a minute, we're going to talk to former USC quarterback Shane Foley, get his thoughts on the USC-Stanford game.
You are listening to the Peristyle Podcast from Los Angeles, California.
Hey, USC Trojan fans, to get into the huddle of your Southern Cal Trojans, log on to uscfootball.com today for all the latest in Trojan football, basketball, and recruiting news. Ryan Abraham will give you an in-depth analysis, recruiting updates, and will answer your questions every day on the message board. So for all the latest in team and recruiting news on your USC Trojans, check out uscfootball.com.
It's time to get back to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by uscfootball.com.
All right, we're back here on the Peristyle Podcast. We have former USC quarterback Shane Foley joining us on the show. You can follow him on Twitter. Is it at Shane Foley, Shane? Is that what it is? What's your Twitter handle again?
At Shane Foley underscore USC.
Yes, okay. At Shane Foley underscore USC. He was up there on the farm for the Stanford game, and I hear you had a little bet going with your uncle on the game that's kind of a standing thing.
Yeah, it is. You know, he played up there late 70s, early 80s under Bill Walsh, his first run up there at Stanford. And so, yeah, we've had this run going for probably the last 7 or 8 years, and it started off pretty well. And then, you know, he actually was eating pretty well for about 4 years, and so now it's going back to the right direction. So good to be on the right side of it these days.
Yeah, not too bad. That's cool that you guys have that going there. But, you know, we were talking a little before we came on and started recording about your thoughts on the game. A lot of people that you've talked to kind of called it an ugly game, and I've heard that described quite a bit. Now, I wanted to kind of get your thoughts on that. Was this an ugly win for USC?
Well, I wouldn't clarify or classify it, I guess, as ugly game. I mean, it was a low-scoring game. It was a heavyweight fight, in my estimation. The way I looked at that game, Ryan, two heavyweights battling toe-to-toe. Obviously, everybody knows the history of the last several years going down to the wire with, you know, those games with Andrew Luck and Barkley. It's been a tight game in the way we've played each other. It's been physical football. I think we've matched up really evenly and really, you know, competitively with these guys. And so I wouldn't really say that at all. I mean, certainly, you know, there were some mistakes made on both sides by both teams. You know, Stanford had a lot of opportunities. And so if you're looking at it probably through their eyes, they're going to probably say, hey, look, you know, we killed ourselves and, we beat ourselves, that kind of thing. But I disagree. You know, you have big players playing big games. And, you know, Hadari hitting a 53-yard field goal, their guy missed their field goal. You know, whether Devlin Simmons got a thumb on it or not, I mean, he missed a chip shot. And then obviously the sack that Devi got at the end to ice the game and to seal the victory. You know, big players made big plays. Aguilar, Cody Kessler stepping up, managing the game. I know we'll talk a little bit about that in a bit. But, no, it's an early game. We USC beat the defending Pac-12 back-to-back champs. And that's the bottom line. And whether it was high scoring, low scoring, however it broke down, you know, the Trojans won the game and are 2-0. And it's their next step to getting back to, you know, staking their claim in the Pac-12 and, you know, nationally. And so I think that's really the way I look at it is a great win. However it looked, and it's just the next step that USC needs to take, and we took it.
I wanted to jump in and talk about the game, but before we do that, there was a lot of talk. There's been a lot of talk, and there continues to be a lot of talk about Pat Hayden and him coming down to the sidelines and all that kind of stuff. And I just want to get your take on that, since that seems to be like a really popular subject right now.
Yeah, I think probably more popular than it should be, actually. And, you know, I know Pat, and, you know, I just obviously, it was unusual. Certainly, I think that's a big part of it. You know, seeing an athletic director be that visible and that involved, you know, in that situation, probably, you know, it's good for the media, but I think it's a bigger story than it needs to be. Everybody's talking about, you know, him being on the, you know, on the bowl selection committee and everything else. I don't really feel that way. I know that from what I understand, his responsibilities don't even deal with the Pac-12 and, you know, with the West. I mean, he's got, you know, another group that he works with focused on another part of the United States. And so, you know, whether or not he was down there, he was defending his coach, he was defending his team. It was unusual, but I really think it's become a much bigger story than really what it needs to be. And if there's, you know, as Plaschke said in the LA Times today, I think that if they removed him, I think he'd probably be happier for it. You know, so, you know, he's a Trojan, bleeds scarlet and gold. Everybody knows that. And, you know, it was an unusual situation. I think he just was answering a request and watched the second half down there on the field and was fired up, as he should be.
Yeah, he definitely looked fired up. To me, he's the USC athletic director first, and he's on the bowl committee, the playoff committee second. He can't forego any AD jobs. And if he thought we'd do that as an AD before, he would still do it while he's on the committee and stuff. So it just seemed crazy.
I absolutely, you know, and you know, again, it's something you're not going to see every day. And certainly it was an unusual situation, but, you know, I think, yeah, his allegiance and loyalty is to being the athletic director for the University of Southern California. And if something changes in somebody's minds, you know, because they believe it to be a conflict, so be it, you know. And I think that, you know, he did what was requested of him, and I don't disagree with it or, you know, think it was a mistake. It was an unusual situation that won't happen again.
All right, well, let's talk about the game a little bit. Since you're a former quarterback, let's start with Cody Kessler, who threw for almost 400 yards against Fresno State, then had 37 passing yards in the first half against Stanford. Yep. He finished 15 to 22, 135 yards in the game, but clearly a completely different type of performance than what he had the week before. I don't know if you've ever done something like that or seen that before. What were your thoughts on Cody Kessler going from nearly 400 yards to, you know, just over 100?
Well, I didn't really look at it, Ryan, as Cody Kessler. I looked at it as USC. And so, you know, when you take a look at the first game and, you know, really the offense that we saw there, unprecedented, 105 plays, everything we know, almost 400 yards passing, record-setting day for Cody. And, you know, this game was a completely different game. And obviously, Coach Sarkisian and the offense made a conscientious decision to run the football, to be physical. You know, a lot of the time they were playing six guys or seven guys in the box, playing with five defensive backs. you know, we were lining up with wide splits, you know, trying to isolate and create some openings, you know, in one-on-one blocking, and did a very good job of it, opening up some seams and holes for Buck Allen. But I don't really look at it, you know, in terms of Kessler and a lack of yards or lack of stretch in the field. I mean, it was a game plan that Sarkisian dictated and Coach Helton dictated, and I think Cody Kessler executed well. Certainly efficient. I think the patience he displayed, you know, rolling out and waiting for guys to get open. I mean, those are senior, you know, upper class returning starter defensive backs. I mean, that's the strength of that defense. They lost a lot of guys on the front seven, as we know, with Trent Murphy and Ben Gardner and Shane Scove. And so, you know, obviously their DBs, you know, are tough football players. And so, you know, I think that he executed very well. You know, he managed the game. Certainly, you know, there were a number of, I think, situations in the first and the second half, beginning in the second half, where we had three and outs, and that certainly put a lot of pressure on the defense, especially how much of the time Stanford was playing in you know, USC's red zone. But I think that overall, you know, with Cody Kessler, I think he played a very good game, consistent, and was very poised in the pocket, bought himself some time in the pocket. We had a couple of sacks that, you know, against a defense that puts a lot of pressure historically on quarterbacks. And so I would, you know, again, be very happy with the win, you know, the next step, like I, you know, had mentioned earlier, and, you know, getting ready for Boston College. I'd feel really good about the performance that Cody Kessler had.
I guess the big thing, if you look at the game and how close it was and, you know, how Stanford struggled in the red zone and USC defense played really well in the red zone, but the fact that USC kept the ball and didn't turn it over, I thought was the big factor in the game. I mean, just if you one or two turnovers in that game, and it's likely the result's going to be different.
Well, certainly. I mean, obviously, Buck got popped, you know, kind of on that first one and coughed it up, and Zach Banner recovered it. So, you know, we did have one fumble that we recovered, and certainly, we were on the other end, you know, getting the other two fumbles, and so. Yeah, winning the turnover battle as time goes on, certainly that's a huge statistic that you look at. Third down conversions and turnovers, turnover margin, I think are the two biggest statistics for winning and losing. And so, you know, obviously winning those, they had a lot of momentum, you know, going down there right after Hayes Pollard, you know, end of the third quarter, beginning of the fourth, when he got thrown out of the game, and on the very next play, they cough it up, you know, on whatever it was, 30 or 25-yard line, was a huge transition. I mean, that was a very, very big deal. And so, you know, I think, yeah, with winning the turnovers, certainly getting the fourth down stop down there, you know, going in and then missing that field goal. You know, we obviously made plays when we needed to, and, you know, kind of a, you know, obviously put ourselves and our defense in, you know, some pretty tough situations, but they answered the bell and made some big, big plays when it counted most.
Yeah, and Buck Allen, if you watch the game and watch it again, I wouldn't have walked away saying Buck Allen had 154 yards. He had a couple big runs and stuff, but they just kept going with him, and, you know, he kept delivering. There was a couple drives where he would get 10 yards a pop, you know, first down, yep. First down, and, you know, yeah. He had that big 50-yarder. But what did you think about, you know, the run game and Buck Allen?
You know, I really, Ryan, one of the things I take away from this game is continued offensive line improvement, you know, year over year, where we've been to where we are now. I think Tim Drebno, sing his praises. I mean, I think he was a huge acquisition for Coach Sark bringing him in. You've got, obviously, with Logan Don and Damian Mama, you know, shaking off the injury and starting again, you know, two true freshmen starting out there. Zach Banner, you know, in his first year of starting, you got a lot of new faces on that line. Obviously, Max Turk playing a new position and Chad Wheeler on the left side. You know, it wasn't perfect, you know, but I think really kind of getting down to it, the wide splits, you know, getting a body on a body and creating some of those seams and gaps were huge. I agree with you. The 154 yards, you know, was surprising. The 50 yards, the 50 yard run obviously was a big part of that, but there were a number of runs where he was getting 10, 12 yards and not even getting touched until he was 8 yards downfield. And so tremendous job, I think, overall, you know, by the offensive line and by the tight ends too. Randall Telfer, you know, had, who I think is a tremendous player, gave up the one sack. He was very frustrated with that, but by and large, I think those guys did a great job. I think the backs are continuing to, you know, pick up big, you know, big blocks in the backfield. The communication that I noticed with Randall Telfer on one particular play, you know, tapping and giving Cody Kessler a heads up that there was pressure coming from the left side. You know, Kessler was talking to Buck Allen, you know, coming over and crossing over and chopping the guy down. You know, I think they're doing a tremendous job for the second game of the season to be playing at the farm at Stanford and to be picking that up. We didn't win every battle, but I'll tell you, a lot of toughness, a lot of tenacity, and, you know, being able to run the ball and really that being really the highlight of the day, put 154 yards with Buck Allen on him was a tremendous, you know, situation to build on.
Let's go to the defensive side of the ball for a little bit. Uh-huh. And, you know, pretty much every drive Stanford had, we were talking to Dave Lombardi, who covers Stanford from the bootleg.com in the first segment. And he said every single drive Stanford got into inside the USC 30. There wasn't any three and outs. There wasn't any holding up, you know, on one side of the field. They were always in, you know, ending up in USC territory. And the fact that to only get 10 points, and if you watch the replay of the game, you're like, wow, how did they not score on this drive? And how did they not score on this drive? It kept happening over and over again. I mean, I don't know how they mentally could stay in there and fight as hard as they did to make sure that Stanford wouldn't score more.
Well, you know, I think that's a big part of it. I mean, mental toughness is a big part of playing football, Ryan. And certainly I think what we're seeing right now with, I think, overcoming, you know, some of the other stories off the field and some of the things that they've blocked out and just said, you know what, hey, we're a team, we're Trojans. We're going to play together. We're going to find a way. You know, we're traveling with 57 guys. You know, Greg Townsend, you know, didn't travel on the trip. Depth is going to be an issue, you know, for this season. We know this. But they've got what they've got, and they play together. You know, they play to win, and you know, they came together to make big plays when it counted most. I mean, certainly, you know, Stanford had opportunities. I mean, we stuff them on a fourth down. You know, they miss a field goal. You know, they fumble that, you know, down there going in the other time. Penalties were a big part of this game as well for both sides. You know, the chop block that they called. Herbstreit, you know, said it was a little bit questionable, but, you know, high-low designated. I mean, that took points off the board as well. So you had, as we said earlier, I mean, from Stanford's standpoint, I'm sure they feel like they beat themselves and whatever else. But, you know, all they can do is, regroup on their side. And obviously it's a great one for us to build on. But I think, you know, the defense, you know, answered the bell. And, you know, we didn't get a lot of three and outs. They were pretty successful on third down conversions. But, you know, again, the deeper we got, you know, into USC's red zone, the tougher we played. We made them earn every point that they had, even though it was 10 points. You know, it was a great day for the Trojan defense and for Justin Wilcox.
Yeah, and, you know, the two sacks late, you know, Leonard Williams gets on the board. He had 11 tackles. Wasn't even sure if he was going to play. I mean, the guy wasn't practicing all week. I mean, the fact that he could go out there, I don't really expect to see him practice the rest of the year, Shane, but if he plays like that, he doesn't need to practice.
Well, you know, I think Ryan, he's one of those guys that, you know, comes around not very often. You know, I played with Junior Seau. He's a teammate of mine. And, you know, there's just generational guys that do things really, really well. And, you know, he's a gamer. You know, obviously he was hobbling around. They showed it. I did watch the replay of the game, and because I was up at the farm, as we said earlier, you know, they showed him kind of hobbling around before the game and kind of took himself out of the game early. But once he got going, he got going. And so, you know, to be playing at whatever percentage it was, 60, 70, you know, 75%, the motor doesn't stop with that guy. And, you know, he neutralized their offensive line, even though they've got four of the five guys are new guys. Kyle Murphy's not a first-time starter at right tackle. So lining up on him, lining up on Andres Pete, he's a warrior, you know, and he kept coming. And, you know, obviously at the next level, you know, there's going to be a lot of success. But, you know, as they talked a lot about on the broadcast, he's not saving himself. You know, there was a lot of talk about, you know, Clowney last year at South Carolina taking plays off. Leonard Williams does not take plays off. You know, he's a warrior. You know, he fights every play, whether it's a run, whether it's a pass. He can change the game. And so, obviously, I think he's a huge part of the success that we had, and certainly was a leader. I think after Hayes Pillard was left the game at the end of the third quarter, I think he really stepped up and took it upon himself to lead these guys and to make the plays. And so, I don't care if he doesn't practice the rest of the year, buddy. I just wanted to be healthy and out there on Saturdays for sure.
Yeah, you mentioned Hayes Pillard, and that we got to hear Steve Sarkisian's conference call that he's not sure if he's going to be available, but the rule is for targeting, you're going to miss the first half of the next game. So it looks like he's going to miss the first half of the Boston College game. Yeah, so Michael Hutchins came in, I thought did a pretty good job and filling in pretty well there. But is that, when you're on a team like that and you're an emotional leader, he's a very emotional player, Hayes Pillard is. When your emotional leader is basically kicked out of the game and you can still kind of rally around the team. I mean, I thought that was a pretty significant step for USC to take, because seeing the leader go down like that, they could have all folded like a house of cards.
Ryan, yeah, absolutely, Ken. And, the emotional part of the game is a big part of it as well. And so, yeah, in the Foley Report and the stuff that I do, he's the heart and soul of that defense and a team captain and a guy that, has been there through thick and thin and keeps playing. And, obviously, I think, a lot of Hayes Pillard. And so, obviously, it can change things a lot. But what we're seeing and teams develop an identity as they go along, every year, they create a new one because you have new players, new coaches, new faces. So you start seeing a personality develop. And so, again, with some of the naysayers and the critics about it being an ugly game and, 13-10 and, hey, how can SC be ranked this high and whatever else they have to say, it's a W, and I don't look at it as more than it should be. I mean, to me, it's the next step that USC needed to take. Coach Sarkisian needed it. USC needed it. Backing up a little bit, Coach Sark was 1-4 against Stanford at Washington. USC obviously has been 1-4 the last 5 years as well. So on a lot of levels, recruiting, everything else, this was just a huge, huge day for USC. And the emotional part of it with Hayes Pillard going out, that ties into it because, they're creating leadership here now with these guys. And, having 57 guys, having 60, whatever it's going to, really toggle between number-wise, these guys are here to play and to win. You got a Dory Jackson lining up on Ty Montgomery. You've got, Chris Hawkins out there, playing as a redshirt freshman. You got a lot of youth, a lot of young guys being put in high pressure, highly important situations, and they're answering. They're stepping up, and there's not a lot of people looking for credit. There's not a lot of people saying, hey, I need to have more catches, or I need to have more touches, or whatever it is. And there's not, obviously from a coaching standpoint, I don't think there's a real big push to get guys' numbers, either. And, to run up statistics or anything else, and I'm not going to mention any names, but, obviously I think it's just about finding ways to win, and whoever can step up that particular day, the guys aren't concerned about that. So when Hayes went down, I think that's a huge loss. Obviously, being a team leader, team captain, leading the team in tackles, having a very great, instinctual ability to be around the football. He'll be back in the second half of Boston College. On that note, questionable call. They showed it from different angles on that. I think that that could have gone either way. I certainly was a late hit. As far as targeting, leaning with the helmet, when they showed it kind of from the reverse angle, it looked like it could be, a situation where that was the case. But he'll come back from it. He's done all the right things. He said all the right things. And he said, hey, I have to learn from it. I have to come back from it. But that's what you see. You see a lot of humility, from these guys, after the game, giving credit, Cody giving credit to the linemen, giving credit to his team, giving credit to the defense. These guys are coming together and establishing who they are. And it's all team. And that's what's been lacking. And I'm happy it's back.
One of the last subjects I want to talk about, some special teams work. Of course, Andre Hidari loves playing against Stanford, game-winning field goals the last 2 years. He did have a late hit out of bounds that his head coach, Steve Sarkisian, wasn't real happy about, but I guess he made up for it there. But get your thoughts on Andre Hidari's game.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've got a couple former teammates that have been critical of Andre Hidari. And, you know, he's not your typical kicker. You know, most of those guys, you know, that I played with and that I knew were, you know, unusual guys that tended to be a little quieter. I mean, he's certainly, you know, not afraid to step up and be noticed. But, you know, certainly there was a lot of talk about the competition that he had in the summertime. You know, obviously having a great, great freshman campaign. I think if I'm not mistaken, he was 15 to 17 as a freshman, and he, you know, he had the injury. I know, I think he was a sophomore. So, you know, he's had his ups and downs, but, you know, obviously, you know, stepping up last year against Stanford and the emotional, victory that we had was really cathartic, you know, having USC, rush the field. I've actually never seen it quite like that. Last year, you know, but then to answer the bell again and to step up with 2:30 left and hit the 53-yarder, you know, I think that, you know, certainly Coach Sark was a teachable moment for him to get upset about, you know, about the penalty, you know, that he got. But I think he probably was happy with him in the end. And so, you know, I think he pulled that together. And after that kick, too, by the way, you know, obviously, you know, he kicked that ball about, you know, 6-7 yards in the end zone, and Ty Montgomery downed it after he drilled that field goal. So the emotions were running high, and, you know, he certainly, you know, stepped up and did some good things. So, and obviously, you know, he's been one of the primary guys and the hero the last couple of years. You know, that's the thing, Ryan, you know, the kicker and the quarterback really can be the hero or the goat, especially the kicker, because, you know, obviously in pressure situations like that. But, you know, he obviously has delivered against Stanford, and hopefully he can just find that consistency. They can build on this. And, you know, I imagine as competitive as the conference is, there's going to be some other situations with some close games where we're going to need him to really step up again. But for now, that was just a huge kick and just a huge team win.
Yeah, certainly was. And one last thing, I don't want to end on a sour note, but I did want to talk about on special teams, the kickoff return the kickoff return team, where you have Nelson Aguilar back there. I thought we'd see a little bit more of George Farmer kind of, you know, taking those duties over, but they've had Aguilar back there. I don't know if you've been watching that, if it's been the blocking, but even against Fresno State, they just haven't been able to get any sort of return that gets out past the 25-yard line, it seems like, every single time. I mean, is that an issue for you going forward? Is that something you've noticed, and what are your thoughts on that?
You know, I'm still, for me, it's still kind of a work in progress. I mean, when I'm looking at the games, I mean, obviously, you know, kind of looking at punt returns, and, you know, there obviously weren't many punts in this game, you know, especially from Stanford's side. But, you know, punt and kickoff returns, you know, even against Fresno State, when there were a lot of punt return opportunities, you know, Adoree was the only guy that really had an opportunity to return it. And, you know, love Nelson. Obviously, he had a great punt return against Cal last year. You know, he's a playmaker. He's tremendous. But I think with some of these guys that we have now, you know, with Adoree Jackson, with Juju Smith, with George Farmer that you mentioned, was happy, to, by the way, to see him, you know, get a few catches and be, you know, physical, strong physical receiver on the outside. I thought it was great to see him in there. But I want to see kind of how things unfold the next couple of weeks. I mean, obviously we play this week and then we have a bye. But I think we'll know a lot more probably by the end of September on that, Ryan. I think that, you know, we've got a lot of quite a bit different than under Kiffin. We've got a lot of starters that are out there, you know, on the special teams. And, you know, you got a lot of guys that are big time players for us that for USC that actually that contribute. So, you know, I think that whether it's George Farmer, whether it's Nelson Aguilar, whether Juju Smith gets some touches, I'd like to see Adoree Jackson. I think every time, you know, he gets the ball in his hands, I think he's an exciting player to see what happens. But you know, I think we just need to continue to kind of spread it around a little bit and see who emerges. It's kind of a unique, you know, some guys you may not think step into that role as a punt returner or on the kickoff return side. It can be some guys that you may not think of as you know, the guy that's going to be the best guy doing it, and guys emerge. So I think a little more time will tell as to who should be back there, and looking forward to seeing who that is.
All right. Well, great stuff, Shane. We appreciate you coming on the show. It's good. We had you on a video early on in fall camp, and I wanted to get you back out there and get your thoughts on what's going on with these Trojans. But big win. USC's 2-0. 1-0 in the Pac-12. They haven't been that for a while, so it's a good start.
Yeah, that has been a while, so good to see that.
Cool. All right, well, thanks very much, Shane, for joining us.
Thanks, Ryan.
All right.
Look forward to talking to you again. Thanks.
Yeah, you can follow him on Twitter at ShaneFoley_USC. Thanks very much for tuning in to this special edition of the Peristyle Podcast, a review of USC's big win over Stanford. We'll be back with our regular podcast again on Monday. Thanks very much for tuning in. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. And don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your iPod or MP3 player for free. Just click the iTunes link on PeristylePodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.